Hey there, welcome to another episode of Dead Frog Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Joe Felix. Here I'm joined with
Allison Kloster.
And we are a podcast dedicated to figuring out what makes stand-up comedy funny. Today we'll be covering one of John Mulaney's tracks off the album, The Top Part. It's the track entitled The Salt and Pepper Diner. Before we do that, Allie, please tell us a little bit more about John.
Absolutely. So John is a comic from the Chicago suburbs who we know him through mostly a stand-up comedy, but he also has worked... Oh, sorry, I had some feedback there. Let me start that part again. So John, he grew up in the Chicago suburbs. Interesting tidbit about him that I did not know. Apparently, he had the opportunity to audition for Home Alone. But his parents did not let him. He grew up in the similar area in Chicago, and where John Hughes was focusing a lot of his movies. But from a very young age, he wanted to do comedy. So he got his start doing bits and skits with his friend John, who he actually talks about in the clip we're about to dissect. And then he ended up going to Georgetown, and where he met Nick Kroll and Mike Birbiglia, and he ended up doing stand-up there. And when he finished with Georgetown, he went to New York City, became a Comedy Central assistant. Then through that experience, he was on Best Week Ever. That's a VH1 TV show. And then he auditioned for SNL as a writer, stayed there for a few years, and had his own sitcom, which lasted for one season, called Mulaney, which was semi-autobiographical. And since then, he's kind of done a little bit of everything. He voiced Spider-Ham and Spider-Verse recently. And most recently is the Sack Lunch Bunch musical comedy TV show on Netflix. So he's kind of done a little bit of everything.
Well, very cool. Here's one thing you have to know about the guests that we're going to talk about John Mulaney. One of the reasons that he does love John Mulaney so much is that John Mulaney went to college, and so did our guest. So I want to tell you a little bit about Andy Lomeli. He is he's only been doing comedy for 3 years, but he thinks he's hot shit. Just because he can do stand-up, improv, sketch, just because he's a generally funny guy who applies himself and works hard at it.
And he went to college. Went
to college. Ugh. Am I right?
It's disgusting.
Disgusting. You know, you might have seen this guy at the Los Angeles Diversity and Comedy Festival, both as a stand-up and as an improviser, maybe. You can also catch him around town on his bike. He's one of these comics who goes from mic to mic on this bike, a real urbanite, right, taking the metro, always advocating for public transit. Please welcome to the podcast, Andy Lomeli.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. You forgot to mention that I also went to grad school, which is also going to play a pivotal role in my comedic chops.
Oh, okay, let's re-record this whole thing, Joe.
Is that not college also?
It's like college plus.
Mm-hmm. What would you call a PhD then?
College plus plus.
Oh, so Disney Plus is like the college version of Disney.
That's why you have to pay the premium. You know, you pay the $8 a month or whatever. That's the tuition.
That makes sense. It's all coming together now. Thank you. We wouldn't have known that if you had not gone to College Plus. Thank you.
Oh, well, thank you guys for having me.
So, Andy, you've been doing improv and stand-up and a little bit of sketch. What would you rank those things in your preference?
You know, that's a million-dollar question. It's something I feel like people in this field get asked a lot. I think my personal preference would be stand-up. I think, you know, you're kind of in control of that. It's, you know, if there's a screw up, it's really just on you. You don't have a lot of people depending on you to be able to think very quickly. You know, you have your stuff prepared. You know what your set is for the most part. And then I think for kind of the same reason, sketch should be number two, because ideally everybody knows their lines. Everybody knows where the scene is going. You've rehearsed it, you know, and get some laughs. Improv, as I love it, I love all of these, but improv, you know, I think that's the trickiest, because you just got to be on every single night. There's a lot of pressure, and you got to be real quick to respond to what, you know, you got to put a lot of trust in your partners on stage.
It's funny that you say improv, even though I brought it up earlier, because as we all know, you're part of a Spanish-speaking improv team called Arroz con Pocho. And it's now defunct, but you, myself, and Audrey Pinto would do improv together. And some say that we were actually the inspiration for a bunch of other Spanish-speaking improv teams, like Spanish Aquí Presents, Spanglish, Impromundiando. People saw us doing it, then they thought, hey, we should do it too. And also, this also includes the team Heraldo.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I'd say we were definitely the trailblazers in that regard. I don't think anybody thought about doing improv or comedy in Spanish before us. So I and as one of the two founders of that, one of the three founders of that group, I think I take personal responsibility for the recent boom in Spanish comedy.
Thank you, Andy.
And it's also funny that you mentioned sketch, even though I mentioned it earlier and asked you to speak about it, because you, myself, Allie, part of SuperVaz, us being part of Arroz con Pocho, did put on a sketch show.
It's such a small world. You know, it's crazy that I would mention sketch after you had previously mentioned it. And what serendipity that all three of us on the line right now have been in a sketch show together and been in sketches.
That's crazy. That's it's such a small world indeed.
That was a great, I don't know if you had a specific question or if that was an invitation for me to talk about the show, but
Well, first I want to ask Allie how she felt about just the whole experience of working with Arroz con Pocho.
It was really cool. It's the first time that I've ever had a collaboration with that. That was actually the first time that my sketch team did a stage show. So you guys really definitely helped, you know, shepherd us through that process. So that was pretty dope. We haven't done anything like that since then, but also, you know, that's kind of...
I think I can say why, because I think Arroz con Pocho did bear a ton of the burden when it came to producing the show. I would like to go on record and say that.
Yeah. I know that you're being sarcastic right now, but you, I mean...
I will not make the same assertion. I think everybody put in a lot of equal effort, much more so than obviously when you're doing an improv show. Everybody is kind of holding their own weight.
For sure.
Actually, I would say I would go on the record and clarify what I previously said a few seconds ago to inform the audience. You know, SuperVaz came in thinking that Arroz con Pocho has some sort of experience and or the ability to usher them into the world of live stand up.
Yeah, that was a huge mistake on their end.
Well, in turn, it just.
Yeah.
But in fact, it was all of SuperVaz. Colt, Jose, the lovely Leslie Martinez, who we might have on as a guest pretty soon.
Heck yes.
She's a hard to get. Are you guys sure you can... Do you guys have a contact for her?
I don't. She's really elusive. I mean, right now, she's currently like 14 feet away from me, but I have to email her manager in order to even get permission to speak.
I can shoot her an Instagram.
Yeah, we'll see.
Too, if you'd like.
That would be amazing.
She's actually blocked me since that event we put on. Mm. Oh, it was what was it called? Día de los Muertos?
Well, oh my gosh. Super, well, we our combined name was Super Pocho, and then the actual name of the show, oh my gosh.
Super,
how am I blanking at it? There was like a pun. It was like a clever ass pun.
Knowing us, man. I'm sure it was very clever.
And knowing us, I probably came up with it.
Oh, okay. I no comment.
We have that's the latest in a long history of Joe taking credit for clever names?
No, I come up with the good names.
Or not you did, I'm not going to argue that. My point is that you do end up taking the credit for the idea, whether it's warranted or not.
But most of the time, it's warranted. And here's the thing: I'm going to edit everything you say, so it sounds like you're disagreeing with everything I'm saying.
I can't wait to listen to this, and it's like, Joe, you great. Bye.
We brought you on here because you're a funny guy, but can you please tell us about the first time you were you attempted to be intentionally funny?
2018, after several months of doing improv in LA, especially with Joe, I think we had already been doing a couple months of Arroz con Pocho, the improv team that lit the world on fire. I've been getting a lot of feedback, a lot of encouraging notes to do stand-up, to go out there and try an open mic. And I've been kind of, you know, Joe, you too, I gotta give you a lot of credit. You were really pushing me to put myself out there. And you said, hey, let's go to this open mic. And I'm putting it off. And, you know, I kind of like, in my notes, I'd remember funny conversations, funny things I'd say. And finally, one day, it was a Thursday, I was sitting here where I am right now in my living room. And you texted me, said, hey, I'm at this open mic spot. It's nearby. Come through. And so I finally bit the bullet. I drove over. I think there were this open mic. There was maybe three people in the audience. They were all comedians that had performed earlier in the open mic. And what I started out with was a very, very early, rough rendition of a joke that I used to open most of my sets now. And I don't know, do you want me to tell the whole joke as it exists now, or just kind of allude to it? All right.
Let's hear that
very first joke I ever told on stage. And to this day, it is something I open with a lot because I think it kind of sets the tone for my comedy. So, you know, hey, you know, I'm Andy Lomeli. Walk on stage, shake the host hand and anything. So, you know, my name is Andy Lomeli. I'm Mexican-American. My parents grew up very dirt poor in Mexico. I know this, of course, because they remind me of it every time I let them down. When I was younger, I would engage in various shenanigans, travesuras, as we used to call them. And they would always sit me down after I would do something wrong. They'd give me a firm, long lecture about how they did not give up everything and risk their life crossing the border so that I can get into such travesuras. The other day, I came back from McDonald's. I forgot to get my mom a cheese on her breakfast sandwich. So she proceeded to sit me down and gave me a firm, long lecture about how she did not give up everything and risk her life crossing the border so that I could forget cheese on her goddamn breakfast sandwich. Hold for applause. That is... No, thank you. You're too kind. That has evolved over the years. It's changed a lot from the rendition that I opened that first set with. It was very rough. I think it was about half as long. And I kind of brainstormed. I came up with it because I was having lunch with somebody and they were telling me how much pressure they got from their parents because how supportive they were. They're like, oh man, my parents are just so supportive. They're like checking in with me to, you know, and they want to know like, oh, how's the comedy going? We want you to succeed in the comedy. And I go, wow, they're supportive. Like my parents definitely give me crap about these kind of things. They guilt me. And then, you know, it kind of allowed me to get into this exaggeration, if you will. From that premise, I kind of worked on a little bit more. But I found that as advice that I've gotten from comedy and what I've told people is, you know, everybody's kind of a comedian. Everybody is at their dinner table telling the story about a funny thing that happened to them in the day. And you want to just be as natural as you can be. Tell stuff that actually happened. And that, to me, is a very natural thought. It's something that came naturally to me. And it sounded like something I would say as a joke to my friends at the bar or at the dinner table. And I think that is the biggest factor in me being able to tell that joke successfully.
Oh man, I did that on purpose, man. I was like, man, this 3-year comic is really going to turn about how to do comedy. Oh man, I'm just reading you. Well, that's good, dude. I was there. I would say, I remember when you came off stage that time. I was like, wow,
yeah, that was my same feeling as well. It was rough. It was as anybody's first time. Yeah, that was doing an open mic.
Yeah, and that open mic is no longer available. And like after your set, they just closed down the cafe too, which was an interesting, ominous sort of series of events.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, no,
I want Allie just to come in and just stop being mean.
You're being so mean, Andy.
No, it was very true. It's very true.
No, it wasn't true.
Fortunately, I was the last person to go on stage that night. They actually poured gasoline on the stage, lit it on fire, and said, "We don't want anyone to ever attempt to be funny after that again." So,
and they didn't let the patrons leave.
So you died. So are you a ghost then, Joe?
I wasn't a patron. Oh, I was a comic.
All right. Okay. Oh. So they let all the comics go, but then they made everybody else stay in.
The key to that is that there was nobody in the audience. Nice.
Before Andy could finish.
So yeah. Nobody died. Zero deaths.
Oh, yeah. That's kind of funny, right? Yeah, I like that headline, right? Open mic. Fire. Open. Yeah. Raging fire at an open mic.
Kills all patrons.
Zero audience. Zero patrons died.
Kills entire audience of zero. Yeah.
Yes. Just kills entire audience. And then people think that there's like some horrible fire that killed people, but you have to read the article to find out that there was no one in the audience.
Yeah, dude, thanks for sharing that. You know, and I've watched you sort of grow and say the same jokes for the past 3 years now. And it's been a pleasure.
The same jokes get much longer. And much funnier.
Yeah, but see you pause even, like, knowing that you'll be asked to do, like, a 15-minute set, but you'll just do your 10-minute exactly set right. Slower. That's what it's been all about.
I'm just grateful you haven't seen my 30-minute set, which just really slows it down. But by the same token, you know, I've gotten to see Joe, because, you know, Joe and I, you know, in those early days, we would go to open mics together. I was thinking about it earlier today. You know, how many Thursday nights did we spend in the same car driving from one open mic to another, buying a bunch of random coffees so that we could support the business and then going up on stage and, you know, getting to see so many of your jokes develop and getting to see your process and how you wrote those jokes was so helpful as well. And now to this day, we started off doing these open mics together, and now we're booked on the same shows all the time.
And hopefully we can be like this next comic that we're going to talk about, John Mulaney. We're going to take a break to talk about, so we can hear a word from our sponsors, and so we can hear the clip entitled The Salt and Pepper Diner. Please stick around.
I want to tell you one story. This was the best meal I've ever had in my life, all right? This happened when I was 11 years old in Chicago, Illinois, where I grew up, and it took place at a little restaurant called the Salt and Pepper Diner, which was a family restaurant in the city. Yes, you know the Salt and Pepper Diner? It's a wonderful family restaurant in Chicago, which means that it caters mainly to teenagers and homeless schizophrenics. Now, I go into this place one day when I'm 11 with my best friend, John. And I should say that his name is also John. I'm not calling myself my own best friend. It's a separate human being. We walk into the Salt and Pepper Diner one day, and they had a jukebox there, all right? And the jukebox was 3 plays for $1. So we put in $7 and selected 21 plays of Tom Jones's What's New Pussycat. And then we ordered and waited. Here's the thing about when What's New Pussycat plays over and over and over and over and over again. The second time it plays, your immediate thought is not, hey, someone's playing What's New Pussycat again. It's, hey, What's New Pussycat is a lot longer than I first thought. And it has like a dip in the middle. You know how some songs have a dip, like Guns N' Roses, November Rain? You're like, hey, November Rain's over. No, it's not. There's more. The third time it plays, you're thinking, maybe someone's playing What's New Pussycat again. The fourth time it plays, you're thinking, whoa. Someone just played What's New Pussycat 4 times. Or at least, someone played it twice, and it's a really long song. So, the fifth time is the kicker. Now, we're watching the entire diner at this point. Most people have gotten wind as to what's going on. And we're staring at this one guy, and he's sitting in his booth, and his, like, hand is shaking while his stupid kids jump around, and, like, he's been onto us since the beginning. And he's staring at his coffee cup like this, and he has this look on his face like, aw, like he just got his 30-day chip from anger management. And he's staring like this, and the fourth play fades out. It's dead quiet. And then, I don't know if you know this, but the song begins very subtly. Bwah, bwah, What's New Pussycat? And the guy goes, God damn it! And pounds on the table, and silverware flies everywhere, and it was fantastic. But a word about my friend John and what a genius he was. Because when we were first up at the jukebox and we were punching in the What's New Pussycats, right? I'd punched in about 7. And then John says to me, hey, 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 wait. Before we drop in another What's New Pussycat, let's put in 1 It's Not Unusual. And that is when the afternoon went from good to great. After 7 What's New Pussycats in a row, suddenly, dum da dum dum na 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 na. It's not unusual. And the sigh of relief has swept through the diner. People were ecstatic. It was like the liberation of France. You know, for years, scientists have wondered, can you make grown men and women weep tears of joy by playing Tom Jones's It's Not Unusual? And the answer is yes, you can. As long as it is preceded by 7 What's New Pussycats. And on the other hand, when we went back. Holy shit. It's Not Unusual fades out. It's dead quiet. Bah, bah, What's New Pussycat? People went fucking insane. No one could handle it. No one could handle it. And they were surrounded by this, like, seemingly indifferent staff, you know, that was just like, yep, same shit as always. My only wish is that one of the schizophrenics had stood up and been like, now you know. Now you know what it's like to live in my brain. They unplugged the jukebox after 11 plays. And that was the best meal I've ever had. Thank you very much, San Francisco. This was great. Thank you. Hope to see you again real soon. My name's John Mulaney. Have a good night.
We're back.
That was beautiful.
Yeah, that was awesome. That was a good set, dude. Why John Mulaney in the set?
Why John Mulaney in the set? So, first of all, this set, the Salt and Pepper Diner, is legit one of the tracks that I can listen to over and over again in terms of comedy. I laugh every single time I hear it. It's just so ridiculous. When I'm on road trips with friends, I'll play it for them, even if they've heard it before, because I know that we'll laugh hysterically every single time. I think it kind of goes to my earlier point about being a storyteller more than anything else in comedy, and being able to just be at the dinner table and say, hey, the funny thing happened to me today. And this is really an example of, like, here's a funny thing that happened. And obviously, I think there's some embellishments, and he goes into, he kind of strays a little bit, but that narrative arc is there for these few minutes. This is this funny story that happened. And that, to me, is, again, just one of the most important things you can remember. It's about being natural. It's about being authentic. And as he's telling the story, he kind of breaks off and gives them a chance to tell a joke. Like, for example, it was like the liberation of France. To be able to give that specific, it gives them the freedom to be creative, but at the same time, sticking to that greater narrative. Just like the throwaway line about, it was like he just got his 30-day chip or something. Just these little funny things, these little funny observations he tacks on to this really great narrative that happened.
Let me take the reins here so that we can. It seems like you're touching on a lot of the stuff that goes out throughout the set, but let's take a more standardized approach here. So as you said, it's a story, and he does a thing where he remains biographical. And when we develop stories as comics, right, they're often influenced by real events. And the more you tell them, the more you sort of tack on and, like, take away here. And, it gets altered to the point where you might even forget a little bit of the truth. I don't know if you've I've told stories that I've, like, embellished a few times, and I'm like, I don't really know what really happened.
Yeah, no, you're
exactly
right. You make an observation, and you'll be on stage, and you'll be like, that kind of reminds me. It's kind of like this. And then it'll get a laugh. You'll maybe get a chuckle, like, okay, that got a laugh. I might, as I tell the story in the future, I might come back and add that part again.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And then it's also about, like, telling the story enough that you yourself believe what you're saying. Like, and then that's knock anybody, but when I hear Joey Diaz tell a story, I'm like, oh, he's lying.
And that's the
it totally gets me out of it, right?
You can tell when somebody isn't being authentic and they're just making up a complete story.
Well, that's not true about me.
I mean, everything you say is completely made up, Joe.
Oh, well, I mean, just because I went to Georgetown, just like John Mulaney, does it mean that I also have
what's your favorite memory from Georgetown, Joe? Is it going to those?
Well, going down to the going down to the local pub and drinking a few beers with my my econ professor,
Dr. Schultz. And with your fellow Hoyas over there?
Oh, I wouldn't even call them that.
Did you run into Paul Krugman on the streets of D.C.?
I'll tell you this. I never run into anybody. People run into me.
Is that a fat joke? Or?
Hey.
I'm saying, are you making a fat joke about yourself?
Whoa. Hey.
I'm not the one that made the joke. I'm asking you, have you made a fat joke about yourself?
I didn't make a joke. I'm saying that I have more celebrity people physically than other people.
Ran into you. I mean, when you say some people ran into you, that's the picture that I get, is that people physically literally bumping into you.
Ellie, how do we
I would like to say that Dr. Tammy Schultz is a professor at Georgetown University. She is currently the director of the National Security and a professor of strategic studies at the U.S. Marine Corps War College. So, Joe, it looks like you, you know, this kind of checks out a little bit.
Yep. One of my many undergrad degrees.
Shout out to
Thank
no
you, Ellie.
Problem, and shout out to Dr. Tammy Schultz.
Okay, all right, so it's a story type joke. Right off the bat, he gives like six pieces of detail, which is 11 years old, Chicago, Illinois, the salt and pepper
Illinois. I'm sorry we already talked about this, Joe. I have to mention that I'm from Illinois each episode we do. And so that was just my one segue in to say that Illinois. I'm from Illinois. And I thought it was interesting. I'm not from Illinois. I'm from Illinois.
Sorry, I said it wrong. Let me say it again. Okay. It's Chicago, Illinois.
That's perfect.
Do you think it's like Illinois or like the plural of Illinois?
Yes. Fun fact, there's actually multiple Illinois throughout the country. Just they're hidden. It's kind of like Atlantis, Lost City of Atlantis. There's a bunch of Illinois that are out there that we don't know about.
Isn't the plural actually Illini?
Mm-hmm. Oh, that is a yes and no. It's kind of a made up name. There wasn't even actually a real Illini tribe, or was there at one point, but there isn't, I don't think, anymore. But yeah, Illini is what they say. Yes, that's what we call like a person from Illinois. I should know since I went to the University of Illinois and that was our name, but I don't think that's the plural of the actual word Illinois. Right.
So that was,
Oh, actually Illini used to be an alternate name for the Illinois Confederation, like a group of Native American tribes in the upper Mississippi River Valley. So
Illini was your mascot. You are an Illini, much like Joe is a Hoya.
There you go. But we don't have a mascot. Anyway, that's
I don't think an indigenous group of people should be a mascot.
Yeah,
you know? That's just a hot take that no one
Joe,
else.
Once
has.
Again, setting
So then he talks
once,
about how
once
he
again was... setting the trend. Set the trend for Spanish comedy. Setting the trend for
that's true. For yes,
firebomb takes. I haven't heard that. I haven't heard that. Nobody. I haven't heard that take before, Joe.
Oh, good. I'm glad that you're finally listening. He talks about going to the diner with his best friend, John. And, you know, he makes a little aside about his friend's name, John. He's not referring to himself as his best friend. Which, like, he does these little asides so very often. It's pretty much that style is connected to John Mulaney, like, in every way. You can see it in every album, in every comedy special, and even like when he talks on late night shows during interviews, he makes these asides.
Yeah, I think it really shows his writerly brain in more than just stand up. It totally makes sense that he's a TV writer, a sketch writer, because it's not just storytelling. He's storytelling and he's infusing that with a different texture that definitely, it even if I was an alien dropped down to Earth and I had some understanding of the comedy world, I would be able to
I would be able to tell that John Mulaney wasn't just a stand-up comedian, if that makes sense, that he, and I think those asides are, it almost reads like an ABC character, like a, you know, story plot in a sitcom. His asides are like kind of very 30 Rocky in that way.
And I think it yeah, paints definitely. The picture of the scene, right? Like, you get uh-huh. a really good, like, I know I have that image in my head of what the Salt and Pepper Diner looks like. I have the image of the guy that's really uh-huh. angry, of the customers, of the jukebox. Like, because of these little random asides, it puts me in the story.
Mm-hmm. And they're paced really well. He doesn't do too much of it. It's clearly storytelling first, but the asides are there. It's a really nice flavor, you know, for lack of a better, you know, analogy. If it's a meal that we're eating, it's like the asides are like the salt, this, you know, that kind of spice it up, but it doesn't overwhelm and it doesn't take over.
Would you say those asides are salt and pepper?
Oh, I would.
Man, I really hate you guys right now.
You're never gonna cut that out. You better make sure that's like our.
That's gonna be in the preview. Our soundbite. That's the preview. That's the title. I think we have an episode title.
Can we just finish the episode right now?
We're gonna pour gasoline on this phone. I'm gonna pour gasoline on this phone. I'm gonna light it on fire.
Okay. So then, all right. So then he does this little math thing that like only really I think good comics can do when they have you do math. During a stand-up set where he talks about they put in it was three plays for a dollar, we put in $7, so then I'm thinking 21, and he clears up 21, right, which is a detail where you laugh kind of when he gives the answer of 3 times 7. You're like, oh, huh, I know that answer, right?
I know math.
Yeah.
Then he talks about how like this is a song that's pretty lengthy. Mm-hmm. And there's a dip, and he really makes sure to like emphasize the dip in the song, so that you know, because and he really circles it long enough that you hope that there's a big payoff when he talks about that, right? Because he spends a good amount mm-hmm. of time talking about the dip, and then he does, because you need that's a big piece of information when he starts doing this other sort of math, and he talks about like how. The song continues after the dip, and you know, after you hear the song, after it played like a fourth time or the second time, and you realize it's a really long song, right? You laugh when he says that because you're like, yeah, because I can do yes. the math, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're pretty confident and you're pretty happy about that, and you feel good about yourself because you understand basic arithmetic.
We all have a baseline understanding for math, but not all of us went to Georgetown. So I don't. We're not.
Oh, you're right.
We're not. We're really dumbing it down for us. Over here.
No.
Yeah. Once again, shout out to
Tammy Schultz. Dr. Tammy Schultz.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then he goes on to like a very huge popular cultural reference. What's New Pussycat by Tom Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about how they play it almost every time except for then he makes another reference to Guns N' Roses, November Rain. Yeah. Right, so this is just heavy on the name dropping, heavy on the reference, heavy on the number stuff, right? 3 times 7. Oh, yeah, then he describes the patrons, as Andy will get into detail now.
You know, he...
As I imagine that you just put down your coffee cup, you're going to describe the...
Oh, yes, the one that he describes as, if I recall correctly, he looks like he just got his 30-day chip. And, I have this picture in my head after hearing it so many times of this patron just looking at this mug... this cup of coffee and like the kids just raising all sorts of hell. I can see him. I literally picture his hands shaking and him just like gritting his teeth. You know, that picture is so vivid in my head. Then just like everybody and just everybody losing their crap, over the song getting played over and over again. And then the picture of like the utensils flying as well, when he's just like, oh god damn it. Like I just like picture his fist slamming the table. The picture of those utensils flying is just so hilarious to me.
I think it's interesting that it's so visual. I mean, it almost reads like, and the pacing of it is almost like a screenplay in how it's not a, I don't know, it just, he paces it so perfectly. It's like I'm watching this yeah. film, and I think that he just has such a simple, patient way of doing it, so it pays off really well. But yeah.
I think he actually falls into this novel category that only I've talked about ever. Where instead of telling a story, he kind of takes a step to the side of what that would be, and he sort of pitches a bit or a sketch.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you've had this reaction where like the pitch of the sketch is a lot better than the sketch itself.
Okay, so you're saying that theoretically this works so well because it works better in this form than if we were to actually see this play out. Like, it's just like because he's able to, it's almost like a hybrid form that he's doing.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
I can feel that. I definitely can see that. And I think that does make sense, because if you look at this as a whole, there aren't really, aside from like the, you know, my best friend named John, my best friend's John, I'm not calling myself John, or the 30-day chip, there aren't really a ton of one-liners in like the classic like stand-up comedy sense. And even the biggest payoff at the end, which I know we're going to get to, but even that is like a very, very simple line. Like the biggest payoff is like, oh, and the diner just went insane. Like, that's not a funny punchline as it is, but it really does, it's hysterical because it's like a high, I think it works because it's all of these different styles of storytelling plus stand-up plus sketch. It's like all of them in one, and you don't really even see him doing it. It's very seamless.
And to your point earlier, Joe, having done multiple sketches, put together multiple sketches with you, I think it's quite common that our pitches would be better than the actual execution of our sketches. You can just cut that one. Just cut that completely.
Well, Joe, do you think that he, when conceiving of this idea, do you think it would have occurred to him as a writer, oh, maybe this would be better as a sketch, or like, I mean, and he just ended up doing it in this way? Like, do you think that matters? Does your mind go there at all?
My mind goes to this being like a riff. Like, not to, I actually apologize about this one, but you know when you and I are hanging out, or when you're hanging out with your buddies, and you're like, all right, here's the bit, right? I think it's just that. And I don't know if he did it with his friend. I mean, you mentioned that he works with his friend John often, or he might be working with other comics like Nick Kroll, right? This seems like a bit that heightens. It's almost like a planned improv set. It's like it really is the intersect of all these abilities that he has.
Yes, it does. It definitely does seem like a nice fusion and intersection. And because any one, if you were to like extract any one of those types of things, they wouldn't really stand by themselves. But he uniquely is able to kind of cross them together. I think it, yeah. But where did we leave off? What part of the set were we on right now?
Oh, well, we're about to go to the part where he's talking about how after the seventh time they're going to play it or pay for it.
Yes.
His friend comes up with a brilliant idea of this red herring.
That's so good.
To bring it's not up, unusual.
What's the name of the song?
It's not unusual. After
seven. Yeah.
It's like, again, another reference.
Yeah. Yeah, I like this because he's coming at it from all angles. I mean, it's so satisfying because he's giving credit to his friend. So it's not even, again, going back to that authenticity. He's like, my friend is genius. Like, it feels like a real story. And I'm sure that really did happen. So it almost feels like this improv, you know, this, not only does it service his set, where it's this perfect heightening moment where you're like, okay, we've seen enough about them playing the song. Now how can we change it? But it also adds authenticity to it. So he's in that specific joke, he's giving authenticity and heightening.
And I think I think this is the most random part of this entire set when he says something to the effect of, scientists have wondered for years, can you make grown men and women weep tears of joy by playing It's Not Unusual? Which is just such a random aside.
Yes.
And just the image, I don't know if you guys picked up on it, but like the image of What's New Pussycat bringing joy to people, it's just It's Not Unusual bringing joy to people. It's just
tears of joy. Random, yes.
Like, nobody has ever enjoyed listening to that song unless you're Carlton from a Fresh Prince of Bel Air. And the picture of like people just being so happy to that song, it's ironic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's like an aside, but also it's random, but also it makes complete sense because, of course, like, you know, I can totally see his comedy math and how that, yes, it makes sense. It's not random. It actually is a very logical conclusion in his world. It's, which is crazy. And that comes right after the Liberation of France line. So he's just kind of at that point, he's really, to me, it's almost like if this were, it's that point, it's like the bridge of the song in a way where we're hiding, and now he departs. And right after this, he's going to go launch into the final crescendo of the whole thing. So this is the last departure that we as an audience are having from reality. Like, he gave two very unreal things and now he's gonna come home and it home.
That's beautiful, Allie.
Allie, it's a really good take.
I think this is the point where I light my phone on fire. I don't think I can add anything
more. if I can chime in and talk about how much I enjoy comedy that includes the imagery of people crying. there's a joke by Stephen Wright where he says, you know, he was in elementary school, and his teacher asked them what animal they would be if they could be an animal, and he says that he would be a bird, and his teacher asks why, because so you could fly, and he says, no, so my shit could be wet.
What?
And then he ends the joke by saying, yeah, she wept openly.
That's funny. That's good because it's funny. A lot. Like, the punchline, what you think is a punchline, is funny enough as it is.
But the cherry on top of it.
Yeah, I really like. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's what we call a.
You're it.
People. There you go.
Oh, damn it.
Joe, you're it.
Almost got me.
I'm gonna jump off the
bridge. Oop, too slow.
Here we go. You guys, we're listening. We're listening to Yes Ands in live time, in real time. All right, so then let's end up this thing here, and then as that's It's Not Unusual fades out, it's dead quiet. Then you hear the bom bom, What's New Pussycat one more time, right? And people went insane, and no one could handle it, right? And they were surrounded by like a seemingly indifferent staff. Yeah. I'm just reciting the joke. You know, that was just like...
That was a funny line.
Yep.
That to me, I want to talk about that staff line, or just because the thought crossed my head a few times. I mean, I work at a restaurant, and so I'm thinking to myself, like, is this normal to them? Is this not normal? I know earlier he had said that the restaurant had mostly teenagers and homeless people in it. So I'm glad that he addressed what the restaurant was reacting to, what they thought of it, because that had crossed my mind. So I just thought that was a nice observation.
Absolutely. And I think also because of this picture he's painted throughout this story, he literally just says people went fucking insane. No one can handle it. And in my head, I mean, I am picturing people pounding on the windows. Like, these people that I pictured throughout the entire story are now just jumping up and down, going completely bonkers.
Yes.
You know, I almost imagine people just like shitting on the floor. Like, it's just, it's crazy. Because again, he has painted this picture that I can now vividly see these people going insane.
Mm-hmm. It's like a music video almost.
Well, he sort of sets you up for the next line, right? Which, like, is sort of, I mean, at the time, I think this was like within the moral zeitgeist, but now it's a little bit more questionable. He says something like, "My only wish is that one of the schizophrenics had stood up and been like, 'Now you know. Now you know what it's like to live in my brain.'" Mm-hmm. And you know, you laugh at that because, yeah, it's like a, it can, I guess it could resemble an episode that someone might go through, or the constant perils of living with such a condition. And then they unplug the jukebox after 11 plays. No, which I like that, right? They didn't go through the whole, you find out they didn't listen through the whole thing. And then he said, "That's the best meal I've ever had." And then that was his closing bit.
Yeah. I do want to go back to the schizophrenics line. I think I don't know if I'm like, I'm quote unquote glad he brought it back at the end, because at the beginning I thought that it was kind of unnecessary or I didn't really know why he needed to add that line in at the beginning while he was commenting on the fact that they were schizophrenic. So at the very
teenagers and
He didn't. I mean, I when I heard that, I was like, oh, okay. Like, why does? How do you know that they're schizophrenic? Also, maybe they are. I don't know. I just felt that that was for what it was. I didn't think it was necessary. And so, at the very least, you know, him bringing it back is a joke. And I am not schizophrenic, so I really, you know, I don't know how. You know, I mean, I don't think this is an offensive joke, but what I'm saying is that. Him at least bringing it back at the end shows that he wasn't just using it as a lazy description up top, or not lazy, careless, I should say. At least he has a point to having brought that up.
No, that makes sense.
I don't know if that's just me overthinking it, but yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's interesting how he would like allow for something that does sort of seem careless at the beginning, because like you can lose an audience. I mean, right now he's in his closing bit, right? But you can lose an audience in that sort of way.
Yeah.
But overall, great set. Well, I mean, great bit. And I thank you, Andy, for bringing this to our attention. Any final thoughts on it?
You know, I mean, like, as I said, like I said earlier, I can listen to this a million times. I think we really dissected this one. I'm like astounded for all the time I've never really gone into great detail and analyzed this joke. And I think, you know, hearing you both analyze it and really dissect it, it's been a really good exercise to understand why I love it so much and what makes it work. You know, it really is. It is great how he brings it all back. Like you said, it's you know, he brings back the schizophrenic thing, which he brought up at the very beginning. And his last line is, "That's the best meal I ever had." And then he literally opens up this joke by saying, "I want to tell you the story about the best meal I ever had in my life."
Yeah, it's really satisfying. A very, very symmetrical story. I really liked it a lot.
Yeah.
You know, right now, you can follow me on Instagram at Andy with a Y, with a Y, W-H-Y. I don't know when this episode is coming out, but...
That's still sort of vague. Hold on, it's at A N D Y, W I T H.
Well, there's another A in there.
H I Y.
A-N-D-Y-W-I-T-H. Oh, there's a name there, yeah. With A-W-H-Y. I should have written it down and then spelled it out. It's all there, Andy with a Y. Oh, you were talking about when it's coming out? When is the episode? I don't know when the episode is coming out, but if you follow me on Instagram, you'll see when and where you can see me do stand-up and improv all across L.A. And there's a good chance you'll see Joe and or Ellie with me.
Huh? Heck yeah.
Where?
On his Instagram.
Oh, what? Yeah.
Are you listening? Joseph. Okay,
I think we've killed that frog.
I'm saying Joseph. I was just saying your name in a... You know what? I'm doing symmetry as well. Earlier in the episode, I called you out for being mean to Andy, so now I have to do it at the end of the episode, too. That's just symmetry, just like John Mulaney.
The lessons of this set are already being absorbed. This is amazing.
Applied.
I feel like...
Exactly. Yeah. You should be applauding this ending right now, Joe. I should hear a nonstop applause.
I think we've